Betty came to the FACT organization a long time ago, and she'll give you the exact number of years, but I know it was in the early days of our existence, and we've been in existence nearly 18 years. And she was as frightened as anyone could be with a cancer problem that had been treated conventionally for 2 years, and it was still a problem for her. Now, Betty is what we call one of our babies. Do you mind?
No.
No. Because it was through our help entirely that Betty found a resource that helped her, and here she is today. And I want to add something. She has now become a counselor. Now, a lot of people who are lay people without enough experience do become counselors of one sort or another, or if they have a little introduction to nutrition and they hear nutrition is good for the cancer patient, they think that automatically makes them competent to take care of cancer. It isn't so, but Betty's own experience and the additional training that she had after her own experience would make her someone that we would feel very comfortable referring a patient to. She's way out on the West Coast now, no longer one of our New York City residents, so it's much harder for us to do that, but we appreciate what she's doing and how well she's doing it. And so without taking up too much of your time, Betty, I want you to meet Betty Fowler, and this should be an important event for you.
It's an important event for me. Thank you, Ruth. I don't know how I can follow that up. I'm going to try. I want to thank FACT. I want to thank Ruth for the privilege of telling my victory over cancer, and as you know from Ruth, I would not be alive today if it were not for FACT. Bless you, FACT. First, my background. I come from a family of cancer victims. I have lost 3 aunts, 2 uncles, 3 cousins. And on the 9th of this month, 18 days ago, my brother died of cancer. My brother did not choose to follow a non-toxic therapy program. He chose to follow mainstream medicine. I would like to dedicate my talk today to my brother, because although he did not follow any non-toxic therapy program, I don't want his death to be in vain, but send a message to all cancer patients in the audience that mainstream medicine does not work. Cancer patients, I urge you to contact FACT, Ruth Sackman in New York City, Susan Silberstein in Philadelphia. I urge you to get on a nutritional program synergistic to your emotional, physical, and genetic needs, as I did 15 years ago. I have witnessed the failure of drugs, surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, and I have witnessed personally the success of biological repair. I was living and working in New York City when I was diagnosed as having cancer. The year was 1971, but my health problems did not start in 1971. My problems started in 1968. I was visiting doctors with the following complaints. 1, I was tired most of the day. I just did not have any strength. 2, the jaw area of my face itched 24 hours a day. It burned. I felt as though my jaw was in an oven. No, it was being broiled all the time. I was being fried alive. I was constipated, item number 3. Something I had suffered with all my life, but now instead of not going 3 days, I did not go for 5 days. It's possible I would have gone longer being constipated, but on weekends when I wasn't working, I took Ex-Lax or I took Fleet's enemas. But the laxative purges made me feel even weaker. 4, I passed foul-smelling gas from the bowel. 6, my eyes felt weak and tired. I was told I was more nearsighted when I visited the eye doctor and that now, alas, I had to wear bifocals. 6, I tried to exercise. At that time, my ex-husband and I had a ballet school. But I couldn't do it. My right ankle would turn on me. I would fall on the floor. And because of the weakness in my legs, I just had to stop the thing I loved, which was dance. 7, I woke up many nights screaming from the pain of cramps in both legs. 8, my chestnut-colored hair was turning gray and brittle. 9, my gums bled. The dentist also said my teeth were loose. I had pyorrhea. That was the diagnosis. 10, I felt despair. On April 13th, 1971, the doctor removed some skin from my left lower lip. About a week later, the telephone rang at my office desk. It was the nurse who worked for my doctor. "Betty," she said, "the doctor would like to have you come in." I went to the doctor's office. I can still remember the doctor telling me, "You have cancer." I was stunned. An electric shockwave smacked me in my stomach, and I thought, "I'm having a nightmare. Wake me up, please. This can't be happening to me. After all, I have had a lot of biopsies in my life, and none of them had been malignant. I had a charmed life," or so I thought. No one knows how you feel when you're told you have cancer except another cancer patient. I was terror-stricken. I experienced shock, anger, depression, fear. Yes, I've got to tell you, the fear of dying. Death is the great unknown. There's no one around who can tell you what being dead feels like. I felt as though the doctor had slapped me with a death sentence, and I wondered, how long would I live? I remember thinking, should I fold up and cash in my chips? It was very tempting to tear up my membership in the human race. Yes, I was contemplating suicide. I remember thinking, does anyone really care whether I live or die? I began to see and hear evidence that nobody cared. I felt that no one else seemed panicky, just me. The doctor was cool, scientific. My spouse at the time was cool, sad-looking. Friends who found out I had cancer looked sad and looked at me as though I were already dead. I asked God, why me? What did I do so bad you want to kill me? What was I being punished for? The emotional strain made me uptight, and sometimes the strain was so unbearable I thought, this is too much, too much. Self-doubts surfaced, and I remember thinking that the odds are against me. I remember speaking that word cancer and noticing that people stepped back from me. That was scary. It felt as though I had told them I had the black plague. Before facing cancer, I must tell you, I had my share of illness, like many other cancer patients. Maybe some of you can relate to this. 1, in 1935, my tonsils and adenoids were removed. I was 10 years of age at the time. There goes part of my immune system. In 1939, when I was 14, some hair grew on a mole in my left cheek. The hairs were removed with electrolysis, and the mole receded. It was my uncle, who was a doctor, who did that for me. He said, "Betty, watch that area of your face." From 1948 through 1951, I suffered with a pilonodal cyst. It was excised several times. It was drained. It was finally healed after an excruciating 3-month period of cauterization, daily at first, then weekly. In 1962, I had a partial hysterectomy. I still have my ovaries. In 1963, I had tests to determine if my gallbladder was okay. Fortunately, I passed the test, but I still had the complaints that made the doctor think I had a gallbladder problem. In 1964, the mole on my left cheek grew. It was excised, biopsied, and I was told there was no malignancy. In 1965, my gynecologist prescribed estrogen. I took it for 3 months. I stopped after a growth ballooned on the under arch of my left foot. It was excised, it too was biopsied, no cancer. But Lady Luck left me in 1971. For 1 year, from 1971 to 1972, I followed the advice of my doctor. In January of 1972, I saw my doctor for a retest. Aha, He said I had to see another doctor. Reason? He said he was concerned that the type of cancer I had, a basal cell carcinoma, a type of cancer that he told me in 1971 had little danger of spreading, had spread. He now said, Betty, you could have melanoma, sarcoma of the jaw, or cancer elsewhere. I saw the doctor he recommended. He did a biopsy, called me in his office, and told me he wanted me to see an oncologist who was an expert on Mohs chemosurgery. He explained the technique named for the man who developed it, Dr. Frederick Mohs of the University of Wisconsin. I was told I would have to be operated on a daily basis for a 2-week period. He said I would not have to stay in hospital, but could have Mohs chemosurgery on an outpatient basis. I would have to arrive in hospital at 9 a.m. I would be able to leave every day at 5 p.m. He said, consider it a new job for 2 weeks. The surgeon would put chemicals on my face. He would remove very thin layers of skin, bisect or quarter them, and mark them with various colors of dye. A map would be made of the removed tissue. Using the various colors, the oncologist would be able to pinpoint the exact location of any residual tumor by viewing each specimen under a microscope. He also explained that I would need x-rays and other tests to find out if cancer cells had spread through my bloodstream or lymph system. He further explained the possibility of my undergoing plastic surgery in the future because I would be disfigured possibly from the procedure of Mohs chemosurgery. I was shocked. Why? Because I was already disfigured from a second operation performed in hospital in 1971. As I told you, I had my first cancer operation in the doctor's office April 13th, 1971. He insisted when he received the biopsy report that I go to the hospital, and on April 27th, 1971, I went back in because he said we can get this all out, no problem. However, the report, biopsy report of both operations, and I quote, I have them with me, diagnosis, basal cell carcinoma, skin, resection margins are not cleared of tumor. When the surgeon removed the bandages on my lip and chin after the second operation, there was a big blue lump on my lower left part of the lip and down to my chin here. It did not heal. After 3 months, I asked why. The surgeon's reply was, this is your cancer showing. You'll have to live with it the rest of your life. I felt I had half a face. I felt I was not quite human. I decided right then and there, when I saw the other surgeon, win or lose, I was going to find another way to fight cancer. I didn't know it then, but I had made the decision to work hard to live, and it's a decision I'm glad I made. I left the doctor's office and I went to a health store in my neighborhood. I found a book called New Hope for Cancer Victims by William Donald Kelly, DDS. I scanned the book. I got very excited over the symptoms of cancer listed in the book. They matched my symptoms, all except one, hernia. I did not have a hernia. In this little book, Kelly lists the true early signs of cancer. I'll give them to you. 1, gas on stomach or bowel. 2, sudden weakness of eyes. 3, tired feeling most of the time. 4, muscle weakness and cramps, first in back, then in chest. 5, extreme mental depression. 6, sudden change in hair texture and color. 7, development of various hernias, only in slow-growing tumors. Compare the 7 warning signals that Kelly lists to the 7 warning signals of cancer listed by the American Cancer Society. 1, change in bowel or bladder habits. 2, a sore that does not heal. 3, unusual bleeding or discharge. 4, thickening of or lump in breast or elsewhere. 5, indigestion or difficulty in swallowing. 6, obvious change in wart or mole. 7, nagging cough, or hoarseness. According to Kelly, the above 7 warning signals are late warning signals of cancer because by the time a doctor clinically describes your tumor, it is many months or years old. Through the health food store owner, I found Ruth Sackman, and through Ruth, I got on a biological repair program, the Kelly program. Ruth gave me hope. With Ruth's help, I overcame the feeling of helplessness and hopelessness and the desire or the thought of committing suicide. Ruth is also a great teacher. I learned from Ruth that tumors are the characteristic visible signs of most forms of cancer, but they are not the disease itself. While removal of the tumor or tumors may have the effect of seeming to cure cancer, the unresolved subclinical cancer may and often does surface again to become a problem. A year, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years. That's not the way to get rid of your cancer. Non-toxic therapists have evolved an understanding of cancer which is vastly divergent from the almost medieval concept that cancer is a tumor disease and that cancer treatment means the elimination of tumors. Cancer, I have learned, is a chronic, systemic, metabolic condition brought on by an unrelieved nutritional deficiency and the storage in the body of morbid matter. How am I doing, Ruth? Okay. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you. Ruth taught me that one of the first things I had to work on was detoxification. I had to get rid of the poisons that had accumulated over the years in my body from eating wrong foods. I eliminated these poisons with juices, carrot juice, carrot and celery juice, cabbage and carrot juice, small amounts of beet juice for me, coffee enemas, colonics, colon purges, gallbladder liver flushes, reflexology. I stopped eating all processed and refined foods. I also cut out drinking coffee, smoking 2.5 packs a day, drinking alcohol weekends, soft drinks, white sugar, white flour. I started drinking pure water, organic food, juices, other natural foods. Here's a typical day's regimen I was on, but what was right for me may not be right for you. Before doing it, talk to Ruth. First thing I did when I got up in the morning was take a plain water non-retention enema. I followed that with a 15-minute retention enema of coffee. 30 minutes before breakfast, I took my supplements, and with that, I drank a large glass of carrot juice. For breakfast, I had a raw cereal, the 14-grain cereal. Sometimes I had cooked oatmeal. But first, I always ate 6 raw almonds. That's not popular today. Okay. My breakfast also included at least 1 to 4 tablespoons of yogurt. That's plain yogurt, without fruit, without sugar. These days, by the way, I have an high enzyme breakfast, and that's mixing certain ingredients, which I can tell you about later on. I also took some supplements. I even took supplements after breakfast. Mid-morning, if I got hungry, I ate some seeds, such as sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds. Before lunch, I was so toxic, I had to take a non-plain water, non-retention enema. Then I took my almonds and my supplements. Twice weekly, I went and had a colonic. At lunchtime, I had a large green salad, romaine lettuce, onions, garlic, tomatoes, avocado, cucumbers, celery, cabbage, my supplements. And then I always had some juice a little later, carrot juice, sometimes carrot and apple juice. I was so toxic in the afternoon, I had to take another non-retention enema. And sometimes I had drank some carrot juice in the afternoon. For dinner, I had a fruit salad and yogurt with sesame butter, some whole grain flatbread with some raw butter, my supplements, and carrot juice. And before bedtime, I had another non-retention enema. I set the alarm, and at 3:30 a.m., I took a coffee retention enema and my pancreatic enzymes. Progress has been made in the field of nutrition. Now I only take coffee enemas when I do the gallbladder liver flush. Now I get a Kalema board about every other morning. The Kalema board makes it easier to remove old hardened fecal matter and mucus from the colon. I now flush my colon with 5 gallons of liquid instead of 32 ounces of a liquid. I'm a distributor of the Kalema board, and I think there's someone out there who's also selling Kalema boards. You can get more information from them. I highly recommend it. Good health must include a program of colon cleansing. If one neglects colon cleansing, one cannot experience vibrant wellness. Just as one has to bathe and clean their outer anatomy, one has to bathe and clean their inner anatomy. And I'm waiting for hospitals to use these things. The Kalema board provides an internal bath that helps wash out poisons from the system. The poisons are from the unwanted food additives, pesticides sprayed on fruit and vegetables, hormones and antibiotics fed beef and poultry, polluted water, airborne pollutants. With a Kalema board, 5 gallons of water travel and cleans the length of your colon, washing out stale body bile and putrefied waste from the body. I urge everyone here, including the doctors, to start taking care of themselves. The best investment any of you can make is in your good health. Buy a Kalema board today. Do yourself a favor. I won't go into detail about the food supplements I took because I'm concerned many of you in the audience will decide that what worked for me will work for you. What worked for me will work for you. The supplements I took may not necessarily work for you. Just as our fingerprints differ one from another, so do our nutrient and supplement needs. To find out your nutrient needs, I recommend the Health Excel survey today. But since I have a vested interest in the Health Excel survey, I prefer not to talk about it from the platform. And besides, if you're interested in learning about the Health Excel survey, please talk to Ruth Sackman. She can talk to you and find out if it's for you or maybe it's not for you. I purchased a vegetable juicer so I could have my juices fresh. I drank and still drink my carrot juice within a 10-minute period, while the enzymes are there and have not been oxidized in the air. By the way, in between drinking juices, I drank herbal teas, such as peppermint tea. For some ideas and inspiration, because I did not know anything about good food, I bought the paperback Raw Vegetable Juices by N.W. Walker, plus other books, many of which are available here in the lobby today or by mail from FACT. It took me 2 years, 4 months to overcome my cancer. In 1974, I saw a surgeon who removed the disfigurement between my lower left lip and chin. He told me that what he removed was a myodox or mucus cyst. It took 3 visits to the doctor, 3 different times of surgery to remove all of the cyst. And why I mention that is, see, you can reverse cancer with a non-toxic biological repair program. From my cancer experience, I learned a big lesson. There is no one out there who can do your work for you. People can encourage you, support you, like Ruth, who encouraged and supported me. But there's no one who can do the detoxification for you, no one who can take your supplements for you, and no one who can eat for you. It's important today to avoid certain foods, and I'm really gung-ho where I live. I'm fighting irradiation. Foodie radiation does severe damage to the vitamins. It also causes fats to turn rancid. It is extremely carcinogenic. What can I tell you? Don't. There's other foods here that I'm sure you probably know are not good for you, such as canned foods, artificial fruit drinks, alcohol, cocoa, coffee, if you're the wrong metabolic type, white bread, white flour products such as macaroni, crackers, snack foods, processed cereals, white rice, commercial cheeses, commercial butters, milk, pasteurized milk, Be sure if you, when you go and get eggs, you get the organic or fertile eggs. Don't buy the eggs that are usually in the Safeway. I could go on and on about food. All I want to say at this point is when I got on the Kelly program, I called the American Cancer Society about food, fruits and vegetables, and said that nothing, the food has nothing to do with cancer. I was reading in the plane when I came out here, and I saw in Reader's Digest an advertisement from Hoffman LaRoche. You have probably been reading or hearing about a natural food substance called beta-carotene, and they go on. And it says, eat dark green leafy vegetables like broccoli, spinach, kale, Swiss chard, and greens from beets, collards, and turnips, and goes on. But do they give credit to FACT or some other organizations that have been saying this? No, we're still called the quacks out there. The one important thing I'd like to explain here is the healing crisis. Many recovered cancer patients like me, including me, do not like to recall those tough times. But I have to tell you, if you have cancer or know someone who does, explain to them, in all probability, you will have to go through a healing crisis. When you go through a healing crisis as a former cancer patient, your one thought is, my cancer is getting worse. No matter what Ruth said to me, and I called her every day, poor soul, I thought my cancer at the beginning when I went through my healing crisis was killing me. The big mistake a lot of people do when they get their first healing crisis is they run to the doctor. Big mistake. I tried to forewarn my counselees about the healing crisis. I explained that is the body's attempt to dump morbid matter. But there is one important symptom of a healing crisis that I have recalled that I think you should have to know. It's elimination. When you have the disease state of cancer, you don't eliminate properly. You're constipated. When you have a healing crisis, you have more elimination. You have catarrhal elimination from the nose, the ears, the mouth, the rectum. There may be fever, bodily aches and pains. You feel like you have the worst case of flu you could ever have. You're nauseous, you have headaches, skin rashes, boils. A healing crisis can last from 3 days to a week with some people. But I have found that if the energy of the individual is low, the crisis can last longer as it did for me. And if they have a lot of catarrh in the body, there's going to be a lot of healing crisis. It is the process of new healthy tissue replacing old diseased tissue. There is an exchange of new tissue for old when there is power from new tissue created from organic foods, natural supplements, pure water, detoxification procedures, and wholesome mental attitude. A healing crisis can come without warning, but generally I know it is close at hand when a counselee tells me how wonderful he or she is beginning to feel. We suffer during the healing crisis, but the individual with cancer has to go through the purification process in order for biological repair to take place in the body. When I was diagnosed as having cancer in 71, the American Cancer Society said that 1 out of 4 Americans will get cancer. Today, the numbers have changed. It's 1 out of 3. I think it's 1 out of 2. When my brother died of cancer, the hospital listed his death as cardiac arrest. Just the other day, I told this to a neighbor of mine. He said, yes, when his mother died of cancer, they listed her cause of death as pneumonia. Because of the increase of cancer, we need FACT. I know without FACT and Ruth Sackman, as I've told you before, I would have lost the battle. The worst is over for me. I am free of cancer, and I find beauty now in living. I like the challenge of being a metabolic technician and of helping other cancer victims who come to me through doctor referrals. I enjoy the flow of human interaction. I must tell you, I also let myself feel the down days. I cared for my brother 20 out of 24 hours a day, From May 16th to the day he died, I changed his sheets when he dumped blood, and he dumped blood every day, sometimes three or four times. I helped clean his body, changed his hospital gown. I cleaned his fingernails, which were bloody, because no one else would do it in the hospital. The nurses wouldn't touch him, nor were the doctors. They were afraid of AIDS. I watched over his operations, which I were against. He had a bleeding duodenal ulcer. I called Ruth, and she said, have they tried vitamin K? And I said, no. So I suggested it to the doctor, and fortunately, this particular doctor was amenable. Do you know they gave my brother 20 grams of vitamin K and the bleeding stopped? They gave it to him the next day and the bleeding stopped until about 1 in the afternoon. Then he had a little bit of blood. And I said, and Anise said, don't operate on the bleeding ulcer. Let's give him more vitamin K. At 1 in the morning, they rushed him in, operated on his ulcer. And afterwards, they put him through a torture that not even a concentration camp victim should be, has ever been given, I'm sure. And I watched this. My hands were tied. X-rays every morning. He was in a coma because they gave him transfusions. We have to make sure there's no fluid in his lungs. A bed sore when he was in intensive care because they would not let me in. I was allowed only 10 minutes. There was one nurse, although the others were fine, who said, this is protocol in the hospital. I remember changing him when he got out of intensive care, and his bed sore, just the pus just got on my shirt. What he went through is unbelievable. And if you have cancer and don't realize that the ending is horrible, go visit a cancer patient in a hospital and watch them, take care of them for 20 hours out of 24 as I did. I'm angry. I'm also angry, I must say, at my brother. It was his decision, though it's a free country. He was older. I guess he thought that I was younger and that maybe it's just an accident that I'm in remission 15 years, no matter what other doctors have said. I've even had some say to me, you've never had cancer. Couldn't have. I can tell by looking at you. I've got to work at accepting his death. Very difficult, so forgive me. After I overcame cancer, my husband of 26 years left me about 6 years ago to marry a young girl. When I got rid of feeling sad and helpless from the experience, I found it possible to return to school. I earned a BA at my late age, and I launched a career as a metabolic technician. But the main thing I've learned through all this since 72 is that I am responsible for my health. I have got to work on being a happy person if I want to be healthy. As Emerson wrote, health is your greatest wealth. I believe this, and I hope you believe this. And I'm hopeful today will be the beginning of a new year for you, that you will make a resolution to take responsibility for your good health. Cancer patients need facts. I know of no one else who offers such a convention as this. Ruth won't let just anyone speak. She really is very cautious. There's always good books in the library. You can find the Kelly book. The Lane's book is a very little book that's a good book. If you don't want to purchase it today, you can get it by mail. FACT also provides referrals to holistic doctors, nutritionists and technicians like myself who work through doctors. In fact, brings the public an understanding that surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy do not kill cancer, that only biological repair works, procedures work, and I know because it worked for me. Thank you, FACT. Thank you all for being such a good audience. If you have any questions, please ask.
Have a few minutes if you want to take advantage of them for questions.
What is a biologic technician? I mean a metabolic technician.
Okay. Metabolic refers to the metabolism. I'm a metabolic technician because when Dr. Kelly had seminars, I went to them. They were conducted by MDs who were involved with his program, and we had to attend the seminars. We had to pass certain tests, keep certain records, and we were certified by the International Health Institute. I did go back to school to become a nutritionist, I thought, but after one course at the local college, I was so upset with their concept of cancer that instead of earning a BA degree in nutrition, I earned it in communications.
This Dr. Kelly that you refer to, is that the dentist?
Yes, that's right.
How about fasting, like 10 days, 30 days, just a a water diet?
Okay, I will give you. Okay, I will give you what I have learned. What I learned from Dr. Kelly, he no longer recommended, or last time I spoke with him, more than a 3-day fast. He himself underwent a 40-day fast, and it is his understanding, or his, you might say, a belief, perhaps, because it hasn't been documented by MDs, that after 3 days you might start releasing the pesticides from your brain. And when they go through the bloodstream, they can cause tremendous damage. So he always recommended not even a water fast, but if you want to fast, juice fasting. I go along with that.
Okay.
That's the position of the organization, too. The water fast is actually a hygienist type of program. They don't even recommend it as a rule for the cancer victim. His body is too polluted to start a program of that kind, and not only that, the body requires nourishment while you're in a fasting program. Now, there are many ways to do a fast. This is something people don't understand. You can use a mono diet. You can use two fruits if you want to for an extended period of time. That's another type of fast, or diluted juice fast, which is a type of fasting. But I don't think any cancer patient should undertake a fast on their own unless they're guided by someone who has experience in fasting.
That concludes this tape. Please fast forward the tape to the end so that side one may be ready to be played again. Thank you.